This business is full of highs and lows, let me tell you. It's one of the reasons why we get paid the way we do. We take on a high load of stress at times, and there's absolutely no guarantee of a paycheck at the end of the day. Before we get into today's episode, let me just try a simple experiment with you. When you hear me say the words broker complete, how do you feel right now? It probably gave you a good feeling hearing those words, right? I know I never get tired of it. Now, how do you feel when a client says to you, hey, so my bank is offering me a lower rate. Can you match it? It's almost like a punch in the stomach, but it doesn't have to be that way. Today, we are diving into a topic that seems to affect almost all brokers in the industry, losing clients to the bank. Now, before you sit there and think to yourself, clients never leave me, I offer so much value that I beat rate every time. Well, my friend, I call bullshit. If you get busy enough in this industry, you will lose clients to rate. The goal isn't to bat 1,000 here. You're going to lose a client to the banks at some point in your career, but there's ways to make it less frequent. In this episode, we'll be going over what to do if a client leaves you at the altar and how to avoid it going forward, while also touching on how to make your process so sticky that it makes clients think twice about leaving you. If you're new to the show, my name's Tom Moffitt, and I'm joined by my good buddy, business partner, and co-host, Brandon Love. Whether you are new in the industry or a seasoned vet, you will get specific takeaways from every episode as we strive to make commission breath focused and granular. Let the Commission Breath podcast be your tool to grow in your mortgage business. So with that being said, let's dive right into the episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Commission Breath. Brandon Love and Tom Moffitt here. Today, we're going to do a deep dive on something that we think is missing, and it's what to do when you lose a client and also how to create stickier relationships. So we're going to get right into things. I just want to kick things off and just say, you know, we all lose clients. No one is immune from this. I know there's a lot of warriors out there who say they never lose a client. They do. They're just not vocal about it. So first things first, like, don't beat yourself up too much. Sit down, do an autopsy on the file, and take a good, honest look at why you lost it and what you can do different.
Yeah, the idea is not to be perfect and never lose a client. The idea is to eventually get that to a lower percentage, because there will be people that will leave you at the altar last minute. It happens. And one thing that we're figuring out too is as we get busier, we thought more and more people were leaving, but it's because we got busier, we have more active files. So it does happen. But there's ways to really trim it down, which we're going to get to in a bit. But yeah, let's stick on the first topic. So when it comes to losing a client, it sucks from a mindset perspective too. It can honestly really affect your other files that you're working on too. It's not a very big confidence builder if someone leaves you for 10 basis points lower, whatever the case was. But what I can say is every year that I've been in this business, it gets easier to make it stickier for clients. And you don't have some of the same reasons that clients left you for before. Like, I can probably talk about two stories where clients left me because it was a bit of like a shit show near the end of closing. And I know some of these things that I can fix now that you learn along the way. So what I can say is some of those issues you will fix and it'll get better, but you will still have clients leave you. What are your thoughts on that, Brandon? Same with you?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I'm like, you see a lot of comments out there being like, if you're following the right process, your client's never going to leave. If you're showing this value, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, there's always going to be that client that's going to walk into the branch and try to just negotiate a better rate for themselves and is happier to move for pennies. There's people out there like that, okay? You can't control everything that way. But at the end of the day, I do agree, it does happen more and more frequently the more experience you get, because you have that influx of more leads. So if you're dealing with 1,000 clients in a year, yes, you're going to lose more than you did when you had 50 clients in a year.
Yeah, for sure. And one good metric to really base your conversions off of is your actual conversion rate at the end of the day. And for us, our conversion rate, what we do is we compare the funded files to the amount of leads you got in. So at the end of the year, I don't know what the perfect number is. I think you have more insight on the actual conversion rates. But what I just did in my own spreadsheet for tracking my files and leads is I have a number in there that's already calculating in my spreadsheet. It's comparing the amount of funded files to the amount of leads that I got per month and per year. If I can constantly improve that conversion number, then I know I'm in the right place.
Yeah, exactly. And off the top of my head, I do kind of know that number, but I'm not going to share it because I'm still doing some autopsy on my own past year's files to see if it's consistent there. But why I like that is certain things you can't control. Okay. You can't control busier times of the year, but you can then look and say, okay, my conversion rate was still good. Over the whole year, holistically too, if you say, hey, I'm around 40%, that's very good. Then you know, if I want to fund 100 files, what do I need to do to get there? And you just reverse engineer it that way. And that informs your marketing efforts. It informs your outreach. It also gives you that little bit of time to say, you know what, I don't need to go gung-ho right now. I can kind of take this time, enjoy a vacation, time with family, because I'm heading in the right direction.
Yeah, that's why I love that metric, because it's like, you know your conversion rate. So you just do the math in your head. You're like, okay, I want to add another 20 mil this year. How many more leads do I have to get? And I think the only downside to using that number from the perspective that we're talking about here today of the stickiness of clients is the fact that, like, if you have shitty leads coming in, then it can alter that. So that would be one thing I would look at doing, is if you have a lower conversion, is it more of a fact that you have shitty leads coming in and that's the reason why it's bogging that down? Or is it because you have good leads coming in, but you're dropping the ball during the process? But why don't we go to our first point, which we haven't talked about yet, which is doing an autopsy on the file. So I'm going to put you on the spot here, Brandon. You have a story that you can share with the audience, maybe of recent or one that just comes top of mind, that you did an autopsy on the file. It was a file that you lost and that you now corrected, and you know going forward, it won't be a mistake that you'll make.
Yeah, for sure. So kind of when I do an autopsy, I like to look at a few things. Number one, why did you lose the file? Was it a communication breakdown? Did you say something that maybe offended the client? Did you not respond to an email for 3 days? And then from there, who did you lose it to? Was it a better rate? Was it just better service provided by another broker? Then lastly, can you win that client back? Because there's a lot of the times that people say, hey, I won't pay for an appraisal. I won't do a buy down. But if you can win the client back, it's better to have a little bit less money in your pocket. It's still money in your pocket at the end of the day.
You did all that upfront work. Why not?
Exactly. You're already there. You might as well wrap it up and close the deal. But a story of one I lost for sure was this client. He had pretty good income. Everything was working. He was buying an investment property. We had broker complete on the file. And he just sent me this kind of like email that I should have typed a response and like not fired it. But I sent him like a sassy one back. And I was like, oh, fuck, why did I do that?
You did that?
I did. I was having a bad day. And like,
that was sarcasm. Yeah.
Anyway, so I fired him a sassy message back. And I was like, you know what, like, feel free to shop around, but like, this is going to be whatever. Whatever I said to him, it wasn't in the spirit that I usually operate. And he ended up coming back being like, hey, you know what, like, I went to my credit union, they're giving me the exact same rate, but I feel like they're treating me a little bit better. So I'm going there. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I totally understand.
Yeah.
So like in that case, I realized if you're having a bad day, type your response, don't fire it right away. Just things like that. Like, you know, in hindsight, you realize scenarios you could have controlled better by having better self-control or better control of the environment around you, so you're not impacted by things. And I think a lot of that we've implemented. So response to that was like that day, it was like kind of family stuff, but I was also getting peppered by like my phone disturbing me. My flow wasn't setting in. Now I do my time blocking. I've got my phone on silent. So it's like, I just wouldn't put myself in that position again. So key takeaway though, for sure.
Yeah. And it happens. And I find I'm still, even though you tell yourself like, hey, don't really get sensitive or overworked on a client asking like, hey, this person offered me or this bank offered me this rate, can you match it? It's like sometimes money talks and I get it. I get why people want a lower rate. At the end of the day, it's like, if I was in those shoes myself, like I would want a lower rate for my family as well, save some money. So just don't overreact to it. Take your time and react to that later. So I've had the same situation too. And one story I can tell is not last year, but the year before. So 2 years ago in the process, I was still kind of learning like little tips and tricks. Like I didn't have closing costs to show for the purchase, but with Scotia, you don't need to show that. You just need to show the down payment and a 30-day statement. But I didn't know that. And I kept asking this client for documents and she was just kind of giving me a hard time about it. And she ended up walking away to RBC and I asked her why. And she said, honestly, like the process near the end was like very clunky and you're asking for too many documents and it didn't make sense to me as to why you kept asking that. So those are things that I'm always mindful of. Like if you can collect the documents up front and not keep peppering in separate emails and separate touch points, try to do it all at once. Even if it's painful to write out that list of docs, nine times out of 10, it's going to be much more painless for that client on the other end.
Exactly. And I think we've taken a few steps here as well for when it comes to documents and someone resists and says, why do I need to send you this? I've sent you so much already. I now just record a quick Loom video. I'm like, here's your application. Here's why I'm asking it. Here's what the lender's looking for. And here's what you need to provide. Can we get there? Do you need help getting there? And you just kind of give a more of a supportive role, but also a reason why. So many people don't action things if they don't understand the motivation behind it. They're just like, oh, this guy's just being a pain in the ass. When it's like, no, they need this for a reason X, then they're more likely to do it. One piece I want to add to this is when you lose a file, because it's inevitable, it's going to happen. One thing someone taught me years ago that's really helped me is to shorten the amount of time you allow yourself to dwell and kind of mourn that loss, for lack of a better term. So I used to like beat myself up for a full week, being like, I can't believe I lost that file. That's $5,000, da, da, da. Like so much I could have done with that. And I would get really hard on myself. But then I got this perspective of like, set your time frame that you're allowed to be pissed off and angry. And so I just set my time frame to one day. So I have that one day where I can be pissed off about it. I can, you know, if you're sitting having dinner with your partner and they ask, how's your day? Well, this happened, it kind of sucked. The next day you go out, you find three new leads, you fund another one of those, and you just move on.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that any better, buddy. It happens at the end of the day. Just try to bounce back quicker and don't let it bleed into your other files, because I've had that in the past too, where someone left me at the altar. I'm like, oh man, like I think these other two, they've been quiet lately. I think they're shopping around too. It just gets in your head, man. But it happens to all of us.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Now that we've talked about like, perform an autopsy on the file, figure out where it happened in the process and why. And why did you lose that client? So we touched on all of that. The next one is, who did you lose it to and can you win it back? So we did touch a bit on that. Can you win it back? But we have a different philosophy, which we did touch a little bit on. If you are already at the finish line pretty much and they're losing you, but you still have a chance to win them back by either offering them, like maybe it's a cash incentive or buying your rate down. Oh my God, buy your rate down. I just said it. Just do it. Like there's big egos out there. Like don't buy your rate down. Yeah, you're not going to lead with that, but maybe you do it a couple times a year where it makes sense to do it. I don't know. But do you have different thoughts on that?
No, like I just did it this week where the client, I was switching them to a monoline. TD came back with a pretty juicy offer for them. And I was like, you know what? I'll just cover all your legal fees and I'll give you a little bit of a cash back here. And they're like, perfect. We'll go forward with you. So on our side, do we make a little bit less money? Yes. But we didn't lose the file. They're still in our orbit. So lifetime value of the client is still there. And then I still make a couple grand. It's not a loss. It's not a donut or a zero on my ledger because of that.
Yeah. And then you're still writing down like what the error was and what occurred so that you can prevent it in the future. But you didn't take a huge loss there.
Yeah. So I guess to recap the autopsy, just take a look at what you would do differently. So we shared a few examples there of time blocking, delaying an email, offering some incentive to them, whatever it has to be that you would do differently. Think about these things. Keep a little notepad. Write down what you did, your decision flow, and why you did it that way, because that will kind of be your guide for the files that come down the line. You don't want to always be, like Tom said, leading with a rate buy down. It should really be like your Hail Mary pass that you throw to save the day. You can map all these things out and have sort of your decision rubric that then, as your team grows, you give that to them and they can apply it to files they're working on as well. So at the end of the day, you really want to take a look at holistically why you lost it. Don't make it too personal and be like, because I have a bald head, like figure out what it is about the actual file and then go through the details and map out what you can do better next time.
It's because I'm ginger.
Yeah. Daywalker, bro.
Daywalker, bro. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Now let's move on to part two, man. What are we doing right now in our business to be stickier, and what can other mortgage brokers and loan officers do in their business? So why don't we start off with point number one, buddy? Take us off with faster responses.
Yeah, so our philosophy for our business is that speed kills all deals. So we try to be very quick on responses to clients. To give you context for this, the other day, I had a client that accidentally forwarded me an email that went to another broker that also said they were shopping with RateHub. You know, it's one of those lovely messages you love to get. But the realtor said they were checking out a property. So by the time they got back to their house from the showing, I had put together a personalized budget for that property. So they got through their door, they received the email, and they reached out to me and they're like, hey, we're not shopping with anyone else at all anymore. That was like mind-blowing customer service. You like anticipated the need before we could even ask for it. And we won them back. It ended up being a refi and a purchase. And it was just very simple. I was going to have to do that work anyways. I just sped up the speed in which I did it.
Yeah, there you go. There's a classic example of your service beating rate. And it happens. Like, we do it all the time. We're beating the rate. Sometimes we offer a lower rate, but sometimes it's not that case. And we have to go to other alternatives and make the process stickier. And that's a great example there, man. I remember you telling me that and thinking, like, whatever the commission was on that, that was a Hail Mary and it fucking worked.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of touched on in this piece, but another part that we're really doing here is we are going really heavy on video and we are going super in depth on those videos. So people don't feel like they're getting the, oh, this video goes to everyone. It's like, no, this is Summer and Jim's personalized budget or Tom and Brandon's like exact deal. And they're like, it's very granular and very detailed. And the clients love it because a lot of the stuff, what we're just trying to stop them from doing is researching other avenues and then someone coming along being like, yeah, I would do it this way or I would do it differently, because there's so many different ways to structure a mortgage or to structure a file or a strategy that we have our system and we have our way that we know works, but we want our clients full buy-in to that.
Yeah. And one thing that I'm tweaking myself, it's not really related to videos, but it just came to mind, is like, I feel like in the industry, everyone's so big about like, keep your discovery calls short, to the point. Like, it should never go past 10 minutes. I've always been of that mindset too, but recently I haven't. And I want to establish more rapport with that lead coming in with the discovery call. So I just tested this week with about 3 discovery calls. I went over 15 minutes with 3 of them. By the time I hung up from that phone, I felt like I established more of a connection with them. I answered more of their questions. And yes, even if it doesn't go anywhere, technically I wasted a bit like 5 minutes per call or whatever it is. But I don't know the numbers if it was 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3. But I remember thinking, like, after one of them, the app and docs came in within an hour after. I was like, man, like, this just feels more stickier. So now going forward, I'm going to be increasing my discovery call time, building more of that rapport, and answering more of their questions instead of saying, hey, you know what? Great question. I'm going to answer a lot of that through the pre-approval process.
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of giving them the time of day when they're asking for it instead of trying to push them off further and further down the line. Another piece you've added back in and you're testing this, so I'll share it with the group, is more of an in-depth strategy call, especially for those first-time homebuyer clients who have questions, but they don't feel comfortable knowing what to ask or how to ask it, or even they don't want to feel stupid. You have a more in-depth strategy call with them that walks them through all the particulars and nitty-gritty of the mortgage itself and just kind of puts their mind at ease. Once again, this establishes more rapport. It stops them from hopping on Google and typing things in that then maybe pulls them to another lender's site or an answer from another broker, whatever it might be.
Well, yeah, at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, what makes you different from the bank or these online rate sites? If it's not rate, then you have to differentiate yourself. And that's what I'm trying to do right now, is not try to just perform on speed and service, but also get more connected with my clients, show them more strategy and tell them, hey, I'm here for the future for you too. Like, I want to see you achieve some more financial goals, whether it's from the mortgage or real estate. Like, I'm here to help you with that. So one thing I started doing lately too, is with that strategy call, you and I both do it right now where we send off the pre-approval and we go through the video with strategy in the video as well. It usually ends up being closer to 10 minutes for my videos. I know yours are a bit shorter because you offer that strategy call as well. But what I just started doing was I'm offering a strategy call after approval, whereas most brokers, they'll do the strategy call before pre-approval. So what I'm doing is once I send that pre-approval out, in that video, I say, hey, here's everything. I just went through all of it. But if you have any more questions and you wanted to dive into more specifics on strategy, like prepayment privileges, penalties, porting, all of that good stuff, let's hop on a Zoom meeting and we're going to go over a 20-minute call. I'm going to dive in deep with it and go over your future plans as well. This is like very, very recent. Over the last week, everyone I've asked have booked calls with a strategy call. So people want it. And I haven't tested it yet because they all booked for next week, but I'm pumped to kind of report back on the pod here and with you, Brandon, to see how it goes. One last point on that. I'm sharing all that sauce here, buddy. So I got this tip from Lead to Close podcast with Greg Williamson. He just shared this as well, that he does this, I think, with his coaching calls. I don't know what he uses it for, but it's an app called Firefly, which is free from what I've gathered. And it records your meeting and creates meeting notes. So what I'm going to do after this is I'm going to create those meeting notes. It's an AI program. It's going to put all of them synced up to the touch points that I wanted to talk about. Obviously, there's probably going to be some tweaking there, but it shouldn't take too long. I'm going to have a drafted email template in Yesware. I'm going to have those meeting notes inserted into them. Right after the call, the strategy call, I'm going to send that over. And I can guarantee you people are going to be wowed on that because it's going to talk about like future plans, how to pay off your mortgage quicker, like all of that good stuff.
Yeah, I think that's great. And another layer that I've started adding as well, when the file goes live and they find their home, I then add, this is our strategy call, but let's do a quick recap. And we recap the reasons why we chose the 3-year fix, for instance. We recap the advantages of the prepayment privilege, why we're doing 30-year amortization, for example, and just going through all of these pieces. So even if they were to go to someone else or someone else hears and then gives them like a price, they're not having all the granular details there. And it just shows this more complete package of why we did it and what we're going forward with. That's like an exact prescription for their life.
Yeah. And another touch point on that too is with the strategy call, I'm not saying you have to go upgrade your gear, but my thoughts on this are when they hop on a call with me, they see this like really good video camera quality with like the lights and all that good stuff. Like I look like a damn YouTuber here. They're gonna be like, okay, this guy's professional. He like invests money in his business. Like it's only going to look better than like some like crummy webcam. So if you don't have a whole setup, like all good, but I would recommend like get a decent webcam. Check out YouTube videos on how to get proper lighting because lighting will really take you to the next step, even if you have like a shittier camera.
Yeah, exactly. And you can tell I'm still working on that on my side if you're watching on YouTube, but little minor improvements do make that world of difference.
Yeah.
And using video is stickier. I don't always use video just because I like to, you know, be able to like quickly write something or like crunch numbers when I'm on calls. And sometimes it looks a little bit like weird when it's on video and I don't wear pants a lot of times. No, I'm just kidding. Having on video and that face-to-face rapport does add a lot of layer. On that topic of video, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you. If you're listening on a podcast platform, if you can throw us a subscribe or a like on YouTube, that'd be great because we are trying to grow that channel as well.
Perfect ask timing, buddy. Love it.
Yeah. Well-timed asks are important in business. So kind of key takeaways from this are the more leads you get, the more files you're going to lose. There's no way around that. But what you want to do is figure out how to plug as many holes in the boat as possible. Do autopsies on your file. Figure out what you can do to fix things next time. And if you can, try to throw that Hail Mary pass and save the day. Going forward from there, what can you do to make yourself stickier? Can you build more rapport for your clients? Can you tweak your customer journey to draw them more to you and also generate more business that way? And just add those extra layers that make you so much more attractive to them. And lastly, as you scale things, all the things you implement and changes you make are going to break and no longer apply. So revisit that client journey and keep reiterating and improving the process as your team grows, as your business grows, and as volume continues to come in.
That was my last point. You just said it, revisit it on a monthly basis, whatever that cadence is, because I got away from it and now I'm revisiting it. And like, man, I have so many ideas. And that kind of ties into the last episode we had on taking a vacation, get your mindset kind of like revamped and your batteries charged, because that's what led me into diving into client journeys some more here. So revisit often, like Brandon said, and you'll be in good shape.
Yeah. Take care, everyone. We'll